Hey everyone, we are almost done, so I'm going to do kind of a twofer in this wrap-up, and that is I want to wrap up what we just did, give you a little context for Kant and Kierkegaard, and then do some reminding of what you should be looking at for what's left in this eighth and final week. So first things first, though, good job sticking with it. You guys are hanging in there. On the journals this last week, I guess my very generic note, and maybe it's my very generic note on many of the things I was looking at in the discussions, the teach to learn sort of stuff, is I think you've all got the gist of it. And maybe where I nitpicked a few of you on the journal wasn't that not that I didn't think you understood it, but rather how well do you understand it? And the reason I say it this way is you probably don't recognize it, but in some ways existentialism is kind of just a thing now. So even all the memes are, you know, kind of existential. And so I think there's an easy way to drift into that or lean into that and go, I get that. That's a whole, it's about choice and me and whatever. And that is not wrong, right? That's what I mean. I think you're all getting that. I think you're almost sort of been brought up to understand or to believe it or to know it, almost trained in it. But, right, there's some just technical pieces I want to make sure that are not completely lost on you, right? So, for example, there were comments I wrote back like, do you think this is completely irrational? Because it is a reaction against rationalism, but it doesn't mean that Kierkegaard and others thought that we just gave up on knowing anything. It just meant different sorts of knowing. And some of that for people like Sartre or Heidegger or Fanon is really caught up really in the realm of phenomenology, which we didn't talk much about, and that's okay. But even then, when we talk about actually having choice and freedom, the same thing is sort of there in terms of a question. Well, does that mean rationalists and empiricists didn't believe in free will? I mean, empiricists like John Locke and Berkeley probably did, even though Hume didn't. Kant certainly believed in free will, and so did Descartes. But I think the more subtle thing that is missing is a contextualized free will. It wasn't just you can do anything. It sort of feels like, right, that's the case for Sartre, like this terrible freedom. But it's not what we necessarily think, right? That terrible freedom is, there are ways you hold yourself back because you're scared to act on your freedom, right? Quitting a job, quitting a relationship, starting something so radically new and different that you feel like you've got no legs under you to do it. And there's nothing telling you no other than you. So there's this, you know, wild, terrible freedom. But at the same time, it's highly contextualized. It doesn't mean you can just do whatever, right? It's not like the rules of physics don't apply to you. It's not that, social rules, to the extent you want to follow them, you know, political rules, government rules apply. You know, trying to figure out what you can and can't really do. And even then, and it's sort of like, I can do all these things. No, you can't, right? The thing I usually pick on in some cases is the whole, anyone can be president. Oh, no, it's like there's a highly set of circumstances, highly rigorous set of circumstances that allow people to really be president or not. In theory, sure, great. And in theory, that's exactly what the rationalists would talk about. But in reality, no, there are a lot of context, concrete facts about our existence that either make us able to or unable to do that sort of thing. So that's kind of my wrap up. I just wanted to make sure you caught some of the nuance in this, and especially relates to Kant, right? Kant had been a rationalist early in his career, and then, really dovetailed it with empiricism in this critical period. And so it's all about rationalism. It's all about true freedom. But all of that rationalism of true freedom is tied to the moral law. So right there's a really big distinction in terms of how we talk about free will between those two. One, the freedom is found in only following the moral law. Then there's a rational set of laws you follow. And for Kierkegaard, you're free to follow and do one thing, and it may not be a clear-cut law to follow. And from the outside, maybe it doesn't even look all that rational. So that's kind of how you put those two together. And then that's, you know, that last bit is, you know, how you figure out how you're going to live is very different for Kant. There's going to be one way for everyone to live. And for Kierkegaard, it's going to be radically subjective and distinct and different. So looking at this final week, and I'm just going to point everything out to you, because once the class is over, you probably won't check back for anything, so I won't do any wrap-ups next week. Looking at this week, just lots of stuff for you to kind of play with, really. There's a conclusion PowerPoint there. That's just information. There's nothing you have to do with it. I have a bunch of resources. One of the things I wanted you to have kind of at your fingertips in this last week are, what does some of the stuff sound like today? So I put consciousness, language, and faith. We don't talk about faith the same way anymore. The way we talked about it with Kant or Kierkegaard, it's, you know, Pascal's wager is kind of like, well, here's a gamble. But even then, most of the time we talk about faith, it's like, what is your perspective on it? Right? We talk about narrative. We're not even sure if there's a God to talk about. We don't talk about language. But then language has a whole thing tied into it with epistemology and logic, and how do we clean up the language and really know stuff. And then we talk about consciousness today. We don't talk about whether there's, and even then the language of consciousness, if you're in psychology, you're doing a lot of the cutting edge stuff in consciousness. And so the brain, the VAT videos kind of show you the philosophical perspective. The simulation argument is interesting when you think about sort of the Platonic view of an other reality, you know, a plane of forms. So those are really just wrap up there for fun. Course evaluation should be open for you, and the research paper will be due Saturday. And as far as that goes, this is a more of a place for you to kind of play with and figure out, well, what do you want to do and study and kind of just kind of play with in philosophy. So kind of a light week, which is good, because it's been kind of a marathon or a sprint through most of it, but keep up the good work.